Yeah, I think it's time to introduce our first speaker and get stuck into this. Now, Cy Harris, a gentleman from up on the Southern Highlands, works with some pretty heavy hitters. Just having a really good chat to him this morning about some of the work and some of the things that are on his radar at the moment. We're talking about some of the biggest companies in the world that Cy is talking to. And what's he talking to them about? Sales. They're actually contracting Cy Harris to come and talk to them about sales. So I've got a bio here, which I'll read out. I'm not smart enough to memorize this, so I'll read it. So Cy Harris, with thousands of stage hours under his belt, Cy has built a practical and applicable knowledge and is a leading expert on how to increase your sales in your business. His experience and expertise comes from 30 years of working hands-on in sales and marketing with numerous industries from retail, wholesale, import, export, and services, manufacturing, trades, and information. Cy has presented to audiences around the world, including the US, England, Fiji, Ireland, throughout Australia and New Zealand. And in the next six months, possibly that could expand even further. He has at least three clients that have hit the BRW's Fast 100 list and five clients nominated for the My Business Magazine Fastest Growing Business Award. So guys, what we like to do when we introduce our speakers, if you could all stand up and give him a big round of applause, Cy Harris.
Thanks, Steve. Sit down. After an introduction like that, I can't wait to hear what I've got to say. Quick show of hands, where are the business owners in the room? Hands up. Mostly. And those that work for someone else? Couple. Those business owners that wish they worked for someone else? Cool. There's always a couple. Sales. As Steve said, I've been doing this for a little while. I think we're 30 years in, I should say. I think I've calculated something like 6,500 sales one-on-one interviews that I've conducted in that time, selling everything from, who remembers the little beepers and pagers we used to wear way, way back? Those of us a little bit grey hair will remember those things. I used to sell pagers and beepers. I've sold telecommunication services. I've sold recruitment services, everything from a pager right through to a multi-million dollar international network in a telco. So I've done a few things and I've learned every single mistake. I've made every single mistake possible. And what I wanted to do today was to give you the little insight as to how not to make those same mistakes. Would that be okay? Yes or yes?
Yeah.
Trick question. Cool. So what we can expect from today, I want to take a real close look at this thing called sales. Because who's in sales? Who's not? Congratulations, you're now anointed as sales. Everyone in your business is a salesperson. I call the receptionist or the person who may answer your telephones as the director of first impressions in your business. Does that make sense? Because this is the thing. Everything we do about sales, the reason for almost every small business failure is a lack of what? We're in the right room, huh? So we live and die by this thing called sales. And we have lots of beliefs around what sales is and what it isn't. So today we're going to demystify a little bit, but I thought we'd start from a common... Do you realise why I'm holding shitloads of money? They're all million-dollar notes, by the way. So those of you who choose to participate will be rewarded handsomely, if that's okay. So I'm going to start... I'm going to give you about... On your tables, because you've just met everybody, I'm going to give you about 2 minutes. So appoint someone who's going to scribe... Write down, and I want the ultimate definition for what the heck sales is. Now, I don't want a paragraph or a page. I want the shortest, most succinct possible definition of what sales is on your table, because you're all in sales, right? You've all been anointed, or you've self-confessed salespeople. Now, it's difficult. Can you do me a huge favor? I put this down sometimes. And I'll forget where I put it. So your job just for this morning is to keep an eye where that little puppy is, okay? Thank you. What's your name?
Sharon.
Sharon. Thank you, Sharon. I'm sorry. Good to you. The hard thing is it's really easy to write a long definition, but I want a really short one. And there was a competition many, many years ago. It was for storytellers and story writers. How do I write something, the shortest possible story that brings the most level of emotion? And the story that won the competition was 6 words long. For sale, baby shoes, never worn. Sad, sad story, right? But in those 6 words, you kind of get it. So what I want you guys to think about this morning is, how do I bring this big definition of sale? Because it means so many things to different people. If we can get a common definition to work from this morning, then that'll give us a platform to work off. So I got, can I time 2 minutes, please? 2 minutes on your table, appoint a scribe and come up with a definition of sales that's kind of short and crunchy and to the point where you go. And some think music. There's a microphone coming right behind you. Nice and loud, so everyone stand up. If you like, introduce yourself, say hi.
Hi everyone, my name's Erin. So our crunchy, short definition of sales, we said it's a process leading to a profitable, successful transaction.
Process, successful. I like the word profitable and then successful. That's pretty good. That's real good. Did I say you couldn't Google it? Nice. A couple more. That's really good. Hold on to that one. A couple more.
Yep, down the front.
Thanks, Steve.
Hi. We just said...
Stand up, introduce yourself, say hi.
Hi, I'm Leona. Sales is helping people for a return on investment.
Helping people return on investment. Like it? Thank you. Give her a bit of love for that one. Thank you. And that's for you too, by the way. We've got a couple more. Come on this side. There we go.
Hi, I'm Mary. Transaction of goods or services for financial gain.
Okay, good. We thank you. Bit of love. Everyone seems to have taken it from one person's angle. It's interesting, isn't it? That's our angle as a salesperson. Down the back here, there's a floppy hand being pushed up by her neighbour.
Yeah, my name's Dirk. I've written down here a mutually beneficial transaction.
Oh, there we go. Look at that. The segue, perfect. Well done. Bit of love. Someone down the back here. One down the back. Yep.
Before one I down the back here. Oh, Susan, you've been thrown into it.
Hi, my name's Susan.
Hey, Susan.
Nice and loud.
Sorry, Susan, I can't hear.
Hi.
There you go.
We just came up with a basic exchange of product or services.
It's pretty close, too. Give us some love down the back there. Thank you. I've got one that you may want to write down if you want to. It's professionally helping others to buy. Think about it that way. Professionally helping others to buy. I'm going to dissect that a little bit today and what professional means. Okay? It's pretty. She's short and crunchy, huh? But look, either way, you're all on the right track. It's not like we know what sales is, but if we work off a common platform for what sales is, professionally helping others to buy, it kind of sets the scene for the rest of our time together this morning. Okay, so a few things about sales. It is the oldest profession, because even they were selling something, right? Got it? Some people are clicking on this one. Good. Without sales, the world stops. Commerce stops. Nothing happens. The farmer can't buy his grain. Nothing happens. No fertilizer. We don't buy cars. So it literally stops. Sales is absolutely everywhere. Whether you love it, hate it or not, it's everywhere. From the moment we first meet someone at a bar or a potential suitor, we're in the sales mode at some level. It's in every language, it's in every country, it's everywhere. Love Mr. Bean. I got sent a postcard once and a whole bunch of really cool statistics on it about percentages of this, that and the other. And they surveyed, I think it was in the US, they surveyed 100,000 insurance brokers selling a relatively, or what could be considered to be a commodity-based product. 100,000 of them, and they were surveyed, and one of the horrible statistics that came out of it, 62% of people, so that salespeople, never asked for the order. So 62% of salespeople never asked for the order. And to me, it's almost like having a date, a first date, and we get to the front of the house, and the porch light comes on. You know the old scene you see in American movies 1,000 times? And we say, okay, see you later, bye, walk away. We don't ask for the order, so to speak. And part of what today is about is figuring out how these statistics need not be yours. Would that be okay?
Cool.
I'm going to delve into a little bit of this professionalism because I think as salespeople we need to wear the suit of armor or the power suit or the whatever it is that's for you. We need to have the, and I don't mean physically wear a suit of armor or a power suit, but whatever it is, you need to be really extremely professional in your approach. That means dressing accordingly. And if you want to know what that looks like, I've got some slides coming up for appropriate and inappropriate dress. So we need to dress. So if you guys turned up in a three-piece suit, that wouldn't look good. The fact that you're dressed the way you are, immaculately, fantastic. You know, down to the older fellas know about nasal and ear hair, all that sort of stuff, you know, that we don't want to, and breath, all, you know the stuff. It's making sure that you are, see, if you decided to become a pole vaulter tomorrow and enter the Olympics in, how many years' time the Olympics? Is it two or three? 3 years' time. If you decided to become a pole vaulter tomorrow, you'd have to adopt the pole vaulters, you'd go in it, you'd study the best, you'd mimic the best, you'd find the best coach or trainer, or you'd start eating the right food, you'd get flexible, you'd build up your core, you'd do all these things, you'd become extremely, you'd do the same thing as professionals do. But what I find in sales is that people don't treat it as a profession, it's almost a job. I'm tagged with this thing called salesperson, and now I've got to adopt this thing called I've got to sell stuff to people. So to me, that's kind of the mindset issue as well. Become the professional person in your mind that is a great connector, and you become professional at
sales,
which is defined by
professionally helping others to buy.
Thank you. That's what the professional part starts with, right? Whatever that professional it is for you, make sure that you are the profession, the professional in your industry, not the amateur. And who knows what the old saying about professionals in practice and amateurs in practice? Who knows that saying? Amateurs practice till they get it right, professionals practice till they don't get it wrong. So, in my sales career, I started out in sales many, many years ago. See if you got it. I lived in Japan for a little while. So I learned to speak Japanese, kind of weird, 6'4", red hair. Speaking Japanese, it was kind of weird. I've lost a lot of it now, it's 20 years ago. And my mentor in Japan said, "Sai, you need to be in the telco space," hence the pager thing, right? So my first job, I applied with Telecom in New Zealand. I got a little job as a paging sales guy. And I had a marketing degree, kind of, and I figured out that all the people in sales were the ones making the money. Salary versus commission structure, bonus, incentives, whatever else. I kind of, that's where I wanted to go. So I decided to become an amateur salesperson. And at Telecom, they gave you, trial period do we mostly get as a sales, or any position, how many months do we get? 3 months. Month one, 10% off target. They used to call me the fax catcher. I'd sit there waiting for the fax to come out. You know, the curly paper thing, thermal paper? Month two, I think I hit it 19 or 20%. I got these records because they used to publish the records of all the salespeople in Telecom right throughout New Zealand. Month three, I had the white envelope prepared in my pocket to sit down. And I called my national sales manager and the head of sales and marketing for a Telecom in that area. Called them into a meeting, and I had the white envelope prepared, ready to go. And this is me becoming an amateur. I was really good at amateur because I was getting it wrong, practicing getting it wrong. So I resigned that day before they sacked me. And my sales manager and the head of global sales and marketing, or national sales and marketing for the mobile division, sat down and said, "Simon, we're not that tough. We'll give you another month, but is there anything we can do to help you out? Wouldn't you do that too? See the person with a bit of energy, a bit of spark, but they just haven't for some reason got it." So I said, "Yeah." On the first day I got this job, I rang the number one sales guy in Telecom, who happened to be Simon as well. He was in Wellington, I was in Auckland. And I said, "So I just joined the crew at Telecom Mobile here, and you're the number one sales guy. Can I come and spend a couple of days with you?" And he said, "Sure, but before you come down, can you do me a huge favor?" I said, "Anything, mate, anything. Because I'm a shortcut guy. I like cutting corners, not for the wrong reasons, but for the right reasons. I'm lazy, but for the right reasons. How do I not reinvent the wheel? Find the number one guy and do the same as he does or she does." So he said, go get a book called How to Master the Art of Selling by Tom Hopkins. Anyone read that book? Just out of interest, thank you. It's made me more than $1 million in commission, so that those of you who haven't read it, probably a good idea you write that one down, just out of interest. So I said to my guy Nathan, I said, Nathan, I asked for help on day one because I rang Simon on the very first day. And he said, go read the book. So I didn't hear what I wanted to hear. So I said, I asked for help on the first day, but the guy in Wellington refused to see me. So they get on the speakerphone and they ring the guy in the moment, and I'm sitting there, I want to shrink into the fabric of the chair. And they said, Nathan, it's Nathan here. I'm sitting with Simon Harris and he's resigned. We're trying to help him get up over the line of 80% threshold to keep his job. And he said he reached out, but you refused to help him. He goes, no, I didn't. I said, I told him to read the book, and in that moment, I had that holy shh moment. Oh, dear. Anyway, so long story short, I read the book. 24 hours later, I was on a plane. I just read the book and read it all night long. Got on the plane next day, spent 3 days with Simon in the field, and watched this book come to life. Just watched everything in the book. He'd almost verbatim learned a lot of the script in there. So I adopted the book, month 4, 110. And month 5 through 17, I broke every single company record. I averaged 172% of target. Now I was the guy driving the nice car in the sales team. Got promoted and away we went. So I was an amateur, a real good amateur. I did all the things wrong. And then I decided to become professional the day I started reading. Now I spend about 4 to 5 hours a week studying this thing that we're now working on, because I realized if we've got an 80% failure rate in small business and sales is probably the main reason why wouldn't I go into it and become good at doing that? So here we are. So definite, where did it go? See, she's good, give her a hand. So there's a choreography to this thing called sales. We're gonna study the choreography. You remember Torval and Dean? Who remembers Torval and Dean? Yeah, the only couple ever to have scored 10 out of 10 from all, I think there's like 12 judges from 12 different countries in the Winter Olympics in I don't even know what year. Now, they hadn't gotten ready for the journey that afternoon or that morning. They'd been spending years and years and years working their choreography out. So the sales process is a choreography. And we're going to walk out of this morning's session with a bit of choreography designed. So this is more about you doing some more of the work than me. So we're going to work out some of the choreography of your sale. Who's seen the formula for change before? Anyone seen this? No. So you might want to write this one down. The reason why people change, the reason why people buy things or move from a state of dissatisfaction, which is the D, they're dissatisfied at some level with their current situation. Whether that be a house or a car or a school or a partner or a job or a set of clothes or shoes that no longer fit for your children. At some level, we are dissatisfied with our current situation. That's what the D stands for. And this is called the formula for change. The reason we change from dissatisfied to satisfied. Okay? Dissatisfied with my current laptop. Need to get a new one. It's too slow. It's too old. It's 4 or 5 years. I probably should have upgraded 2 years ago. I'm dissatisfied. Therefore, what do you think I'm doing? Therefore, my V is what I call vision. What is it going to look like? I could imagine my new laptop saving me a bucket load of time. I don't have to wait for it to boot. I don't have to do this. I don't have to get caught in this endless round of not enough space on the hard drive and sucking it off to it. You know. So what would it look like if I could just... So the V for vision. Dissatisfied. Now, interestingly enough, one third of all reasons for change are created by clever marketing or sales or stuff. The other two-thirds of reason people change is we've got an inherent desire or necessity that we've created ourselves. What that means is when I had two children and we had then twins, our five-seater car was no longer good enough. The inherent desire for me to change was mine. It was inherent. I needed a new car. I need a new laptop. It's not some clever marketing that says I need to go from this laptop to another. Okay? So one-third's created by clever marketing and sales that teach you stuff you didn't know you didn't know. I didn't know I didn't need that, but now I do. The other two-thirds of stuff that you already have inside you need that ring. So the first steps, what is the F for stamps for first steps? What's the first step in making this transaction happen? So I'm dissatisfied at some level. I figured out what it would look like if I had this thing. The first step might be a test drive or a wear the jacket or try the shoes on or go and interview the school principal, whatever it is you're changing. And the change happens, the sale gets made if all of that is greater than the R, which is the resistance to want to change in the first place. And that resistance comes up in the form of what, people? What is it? What sort of resistance are we getting in sales? Price. The salesperson, they didn't like the salesperson. Oh, they're called your, starts with O, objections. There's $1 million straight away. There's the magic word. Thank you. Don't try and cash it down here right away. So there's the formula. We're dissatisfied. We figure out what it would look like if I could solve that problem. I take the first steps. But if I'm resisting change at some level, then this is kind of what happens. If my resistance is really light, I love the product, I'm super dissatisfied, I think it looks good this car would look good in my garage, it would suit the children, it's perfect, I've done the test drive, it seems to have worked out, the price, yeah, I can work around that, I'll lease the damn thing, and away we go. If, however, you haven't done enough work in dissatisfaction, vision, first steps, the resistance is really heavy, so flip that around, no sale gets made. Okay, so every sales process, whether it's an ice cream or a Learjet, every sales process follows this exact same pattern. It's just the length of time it takes. If I want an ice cream, I'm dissatisfied, I'm hot. I've seen the ice cream truck walk by or that noise that they make when they drive around the streets. My vision was, ice cream. First step is, well, where is he? I've got to find him, and then we just go. Right, if he said it's $75 for that transaction, I'd probably go, you know what, I'll wait. So there's a process, that's what happens in sales. Does that make sense? Cool. So, if sales was a production line, picture this for a moment, that you are the managing director of the Apple Thief Brewery. You know the apple cider guy, is Apple Thief? If you're the managing director and you decide to come out of your office one afternoon and you walk down to the production line where all the bottles are kind of flowing off, and you pick a bottle and it goes, pfft, oh, perfect, that one works. You grab another one, pfft, it works. You grab another one, nothing. And you try, 100 bottles and 70 of them go, pfft, 30 of them don't. So we've got a 30% failure rate at production line. How much management time do you think would be diverted into fixing that problem? What percentage of your management time would go into that? Give me a number.
100%.
Pretty much most of it, right? Thank you. Reward for effort. So, whatever it is I'm producing, if 70% of them aren't working, are and 30% aren't, I'm going to spend an awful lot of my management time focused on fixing that. Yes? Sales are kind of the same. Some work, some don't. And I just don't reckon enough management time goes into fixing it. So would it be okay if we spent most of our time fixing it today for you? Cool. Because it doesn't work all the time. And sometimes you don't want it to work all the time. There are people that you're going to do quotes or walk into your store or, they're antagonistic. Maybe you don't want to deal with them. Maybe they're just price checking you because they're the friend of a competitor. You don't know. 100% conversion rate's not the best thing, but we aim for as high as possible. So, at some level, your business has a funnel. And where is the gentleman over here? Yes, this was you. I was singing your praises just before going, yay, he's right in the right place. At some level, and I'll make these slides available to Steve, so you don't have to write them all down if you don't want to, but I'll make them available to Steve, so if you want them, they're yours. At some level, you've got a process that runs like this. And it's just the only difference is how many and how long it takes, but the process is kind of similar, all right? So what I want to do is figure out how to make this process as successful and predictable and repeatable as possible. So, you can actually work out what it's costing you. If you know your average sale value, if you know your conversion rate, you can put those together and figure out for every client that I lose, every proposal I don't get, every sales situation that doesn't happen, you can figure out exactly how much of that is costing you in terms of either one-off or lifetime value. You can actually calculate the number. So who'd be keen to see if we can fix that right about now? Okay, I'll ask the question, who's keen to fix this problem? That's a little bit better. Okay, so I call this the sales pathway. The pathway with which is a structured, repeatable methodology designed to improve your overall sales performance. You might want to write that one down. Because if you go back to your notes in 6 months' time and figure out Sales pathway. What's that, yellow brick road? What is that all about? This will help you remember it. Your sales pathway is a structured, repeatable methodology designed to improve your overall sales performance. What I want you to do is take out a piece of paper, either in your workbooks is fine, and call it my sales pathway. Blank piece of paper, and probably, if I were you, I'd turn it so it's kind of landscape. If you've done it already, that's okay. If not, that's fine. And down the very left-hand side, what I want you to do is list all of the ways that your business generates leads. Okay? Down the very left-hand side, just bullet point it. Nice small writing in the very left-hand column, the left-hand side of the page. How I generate leads. And you've probably got more than 10 of these ways to do that without knowing it. Okay, so you've got a website, you've got maybe salespeople, maybe you're still in the yellow pages. Maybe you do Google or Facebook ads or LinkedIn. Maybe you've got an outbound telemarketing team or small, you know, people that generate leads for you. Maybe you've got business cards, letterheads, brochures, flyers, A-frames, painted vehicles, uniforms. I've figured out there's about 85 different ways to generate leads. So just, can we get a little bit of think music just while they go through this? Thanks, Sally. Think about it. Now, referrals is a good one. However, word of mouth is not. You cannot put word of mouth down, because if I go and print out your P&Ls and double click on your marketing, advertising or promotion section, I'll never find a thing that says word of mouth. You don't spend money on it. It happens because of who you are. So it's very difficult to proactively manage that. But referrals, however you can. So referrals might be our previous customers, all sorts, walk-ins, the way you generate leads. And I'm going to get you to highlight the one that you think is the most lucrative. By volume, by conversion, by cost per lead, by whatever it may be. Just pick the one that is the most lucrative for you. Highlight it. And try not to use referrals. Try to use something else. Path of Least Resistance. There's another good book, by the way. Path of Least Resistance by Robert Fritz. Anyone read that? I take my kids to the tip shop once a quarter. It's called the Resource Recovery Center. It's the tip shop. And they've got a book section in there. And I just say to my kids, mate, as many as you can carry, they're yours. And we take the old ones we've read in, let's recycle them and take the old ones out. And I found this book sitting in there for 50 cents. They usually pay by pound, you pay by kilo, you know? Good book. So pick the most lucrative one you've got. Let's just couple of people just to hand up to nominate what you've chosen. Just yell it out. Website? Explain that.
We're in magazines.
Yeah, okay, got it. Yep, got it.
Partnerships and JVs.
Partnerships, JVs? It's a good one. There's leverage in that. Couple more. What do you got? If you didn't choose referrals, what else would you choose? Facebook marketing or just your fan page for engagement? Yep. Okay, social media. Couple on this side? Brand. Okay, got a good brand. That's powerful. Yeah, leaving telecom, I found that out real soon, how powerful that brand can be. Repeat business, that's a real good one. Okay, circle that one. And, you know, ultimately your lead generation system might be mapped out to look a little bit like this. Okay, we've got branding, we've got a website, we've got lead nurturing, referrals, direct mail. And again, don't bother taking this down, I'll get the copy to you. So I want you to pick one that works best. And in this case, I've just chosen telemarketing. We've all been on the end of it, we've all cold called at some level when we started our businesses. But whatever it is you've chosen. So the first thing I do if I'm doing a telemarketing thing, we try and design the intricate steps involved. And now, what happens step one, step two, step? So if you were setting up a three-person outbound telemarketing, you got the best database of your prospects ever possible, all the perfect decision makers, What's the first step that you would do in order to make this strategy come to life? Got your database? Before you pick up the phone, what's the first step?
What's your value proposition?
What's my offer? Value proposition, offer. When I get through these people, I'm going to say, exactly right. So I decide my target market. I go get my database somehow through a JV or whoever it is. I then got to figure out what my offer is that's so compelling that they'll want to, and Ari, I know we'll cover this stuff later, so I won't go into too much detail. And then what I got to do, I got to hire someone, and what I got to do to them? Train them on a what? I hate that word script, but that's the only one I've found that suits. Because every time you read a script, hi, my name is Simon calling. So, but it's a kind of, to me, it's a bullet point. If you had to say eight things in that call, what were the eight things you have to say that would lead to a qualified lead popping out the back end? All right? So before I've done anything, I've spent a bit of money defining my target. I've gone and found out where they're hanging out, got the database, trained the people on how to do it, and then we pick up the phone, right? And then we make outbound calls. But here's the interesting thing. What are some of the call outcomes? So you're on the phone, you dial someone, what are some of the call outcomes? Help me out here. Gatekeeper. Well, that's perfect. What else? Not interested. Does that mean now or never? It just means not now, right? At some level, they're not interested. Just not now. You might have caught them on a bad day. Kid might have just, like the guy the other day, this kid just went in and had an appendix operation. He had to go. Couldn't take the call. Not interested. What else? Too busy. Sorry, mate. What else? There's heaps of them, right? But let's see, what happens if you've got an engaged signal for a business? Because when you buy a database, it costs you about 50 cents per record. If you're buying 1,000 of them to keep a small team busy, every time you get a number that's engaged or wrong or it rings out or whatever else, you think, you know, that's not a very good number. What do I do? Do I put it back in my database and call it again or later? Or go back to my data source provider, my list broker, and get a refund on those. If you're doing 2,000 calls a week and you're getting 200 a week, there's a bit of money that stashes up for the Christmas party at the end of the year. Just don't waste it. So what I'm trying to think is, there is no stone that's unturned in your entire process. Okay? So I'll give you a little look into what these look like. Who are we calling? Do we have a database? What's our offer? Script training, not available. And at step number 62 is where we actually get to make an appointment or we make a sale at some level. So what my things start to look like, this is what we did for a client a little while ago, an outbound thing, and we had a busy, engaged, you know, not interested, callback, appointment set, and then we designed the entire process in the space of about 20 minutes. You don't have the luxury of that today. But what I'm going to get you to do is highlight the most lucrative source of leads that you've got, and then we're going to choose one of you that's brave enough for us to then, as a team, dissect it and see what happens. Now, what I generally find, this is how it works, right? Got it. What I generally find is people go, yeah, we pick up the phone, we make the appointment, we send our sales guy goes out to do the appointment, and we come back with a load of cash. That's phase, I'm on about phase 12 of my sales process, having redesigned it that many times now. And when I do it, it actually starts like a helicopter, like a picture of a helicopter looking down. If I was to do a technical drawing for the way a helicopter was structurally put together, it works out to this massive tree diagram that all roads end up leading to Rome at some level, okay? So I want you to think about, okay, well, I make the call. What's the next step that's going to happen in that process? Well, I get through. Fantastic. What happens if you don't? Yeah? Even for those of you who have highlighted inbound phone calls as your major lead source. Okay? What happens if I call you at 1 minute past five and your answer phone switches on? Or at 7 p.m. at night because you're dealing with WA and someone rings you at 7 p.m. What happens? Think about every little possibility and start to define your sales process. So you are clear what you need to do. And it's going to be awkward. It's the first time you've done it. But I'm going to allow you a full 15 minutes. And if you're with someone that's from the same business, you guys need to coordinate your approach here. Okay? So pick your most lucrative source of leads. How does your company deal with them? We're going to define the process, the pathway from when the moment that first transaction happens right the way through to a sale gets made, start to define the process. If you are stuck, I'm going to float. All right? Just stick up your hand and we'll walk through it. So you've got 15 minutes to define your process. Away you go. Okay, and stop. Now, the Highlands Nannies babysitting team have offered to help us dissect their process. Now, I've been around to some of the tables to give you some clues and tips and ideas. Hopefully, they were helpful. But by going through this one here, it may, again, take the bits that work for you and listen to how we dissect it. So give us the 30-second on what you guys do.
I'm Melinda. This is Rochelle. We're from South Coast Nannies. We deliver peace of mind to families, providing babysitting services, in-home care, wedding and event services. We also service the Southern Highland Nannies, and we cover the whole of the South Coast.
So it's a nanny babysitting service, right? Cool. And one of the strategy that you've chosen for us to have a go at, and now we're in a safe environment here, okay? We're all lots of love heading your way. We want to dissect your process and help you put it together such that you get the idea of how this works, okay? Because a lot of you have struggled. What's the next step? What do I do? I do this. You're the same as everybody else. You've got to differentiate yourself at every point possible. So your most lucrative source of leads is?
Wedding services.
Wedding venues? Services?
Yeah, wedding venues and wedding services. We provide creches at weddings where we can look after the children, supervise them.
I've got 5 kids under 10. That's very useful. Okay, go. So what's your first step? So you've got a database. You know who they are, right? Got that one nailed. And that takes a bit of time too. Sorry if my back's to you guys. That takes a bit of time. So what's the next step?
Well, with our database...
And you're reading straight off your process, your draft, aren't you?
Yes.
Right. What's the next step?
Because basically the outcome of the sale is that we want more preferred venues or venues that have us in their terms and conditions.
I'm assuming that that's all a given. We've got a great product or a great service, and everyone's in the same room. We've got a great product or a great service we offer. So what's the first step?
Well, we've got our database, we've got a letter of introduction, we've got our script on how we sell our product.
So what's the first step?
Phone call.
You said you got a letter of offer.
Letter of introduction. Yeah.
Where does that go? Before or after phone call?
No, well, the phone call's first, and it's an introduction to our brand and our service.
What happened if you flipped that around?
It said send them information straight away.
Just send them a thingo saying if this makes sense for you and your venue, you want to know more, call me. Otherwise, the next 2 days I'll be calling you. So you break the ice with the called phone mail phone. We phone them to find out who their decision maker is. We mail them, and then we phone them 2 days. Just as an option, you might want to consider that one. Because a cold call sometimes, if it's broken, if you've got a dummy, imagine putting a dummy in your envelope. I'm just creating on the fly. Is it okay? Yeah. Imagine, so you're a wedding venue, you're a vineyard, or you're a Milton Park or something, a little venue, maybe one of these joints here, and a envelope arrives with a dummy. It's like something lumpy in it. I'm going to open that, right? Yeah. I send direct mails out with not a see-through envelope, but a very thin envelope, and when this envelope turns up, you can see there's money in it. Thanks a million for taking the time to read my letter, whatever. So think about that one. Okay, so we've got a design, a little action point. If you've got an asterisk that's just popped up, maybe we could do that. Put it in the car park in the top right-hand corner of your page and figure out where you can put that into your sales process. Yeah? Sorry.
That's okay. So, yeah, we have a package that we do send out that includes information regarding...
Well, we skipped the phone call.
Okay.
So you've got all those same things that happen here. Busy, engaged, not interested, call back later. Ooh. The kid is here.
And then if they are interested, it's a
psych visit. Hang on, slow right down. Told you, this is not about a microscope, this is an electron microscope that looks directly into this thing. Because we all design that sales process, it goes, make a phone call, get the appointment, do the thingo, make the sale. Oh, it's cool, but it happens one in a squillion that happens that way. Except the referrals or people that desperately need you, they're going to do that anyway. So, you need what database system CRM thingy do you use?
Excel.
Hey. Does anyone use a really cool, simple CRM tool? What have you got?
Contactually.
Zenplanner. Are these all cloud-based services? What do you got?
Zoho.
Zoho, there's three in there? Yeah, what else?
Salesforce.
The one I've used a lot and know a lot of is one called Active Campaign. I don't get a toaster or anything by referring you. It's $9 a month. Automated sequencing, I'm sure this will be covered later today, but it's $9 a month for less than 500 records. Just goes up a little bit each time, the more records you have. But okay, so we've got to get you off Excel. And see, you're acting a little bit like a hobby.
No, we're just small. Well, there's only two of
us. It's your hobby. You've got to start thinking about business. Even though you might be business, you're still thinking in the hobby space with an Excel spreadsheet. So action, active campaign or something, get yourself a database. Okay, so question.
What's a CRM?
Active campaign. There's heaps of them. But just one of them I know, Entreport, Zoho, heaps of them. Suck your data in and it's there. Every contact, every note, everything. I was telling the team here, I use Google for everything. Calendars, mail, a whole lot. And my CRM has a little thing that every time I send an email to anyone, it goes and looks at my CRM and goes, is this exact email sitting in that database? If it is, it attaches the email automatically. Some of them send from inside the thing, but to me, it's a bigger fish than this one. So we've got a database, we've got a script, we've made a phone call. We may put the letter first, we may not. You can trial that one. We make the phone call, and there's lots of different outcomes that can happen from that phone call.
Yep. Then what?
Well, the main thing is we want to see the venue,
do
a site inspection and see the venue.
So your phone call, what's the objective of your phone call?
To get on the property and visit.
To do what?
Increase
the site inspection. Right, so you don't even know if you can offer their services here based on that.
We can offer the services, but in order for us to provide those services, we need to know what the girls are walking into.
Sure.
Do a risk assessment, see what facilities are available, take photos so that we can brief our girls.
What happens if they're already lined up with another agency? Or someone else?
Then our systems and processes and our professionals and goes over.
So we're happy. We've got someone else that comes in here.
Then
we're good.
Try to get the brides. And getting through that door.
So is that designed in your thingo? In your process?
No.
One of the outcomes of that call is that we're actually going to work with another agency.
Yeah.
We're good, thanks.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Shivers.
Stow High in Transit. There's a little leg in there. So okay, well that venue is now, it's kind of on a different list right now. They've gone from an A possibility to probably C in the 1, 2, 3, 4 thing. Therefore, I need to treat that venue a bit differently. But what happens with staff? They come and go. The person that was aligned might have been their sister-in-law. Doesn't mean no forever, just means no just right now. I'll go round and go straight to bride. So there's another whole process right there of cold calling a bride. Yeah. So you see how this is kind of, it never goes as planned, does it? Well, very rarely does it go as planned. And all we're trying to do is look at all the permutations and all the combinations that happen inside your sales process such that you build a little system or a procedure or an email or something that happens. Now, so just pause for a minute there. A lot of you, and I've said this to, as we go around the tables, have a voicemail. Hi, you've reached Simon. I'm sorry I can't take your call right now. Please leave a message and I'll get back to you shortly. Well, that just wants to make me puke every time I hear that. What is it that you can do to differentiate your call? Hi, you've reached Simon Harris. Hey, I'm out making money with clients right now. If you want part of the action, then leave us your credit card details and expiry number and I'll get back to you just as soon as that hits the account. Now, I've told people I laugh through the process, right? Because I know they know it's a joke. But it's different. It's my energy, it's me, it's who I am, it's authentic, it's different, okay? So there's an opportunity at every stage to differentiate yourself at every level. So most of you now are going to think about it at the break. I'm going to change my voicemail message because it sucks. I'm sorry I can't take your call right now, yada yada, and away we go. There's lots of negatives. So those of you who understand neuro-linguistic programming or NLP, which is another entire subject, you would never have a script that would allow you to write that in your voicemail answering system. Okay, so thanks for being an opportunity for us to dissect. Haven't even got anywhere near making money yet, but you realize, maybe there's a bit more to this than what I thought. And that's all it's about. Okay, this is an opportunity for you guys to dissect your sales process and put it back together the way it really should work. Every touch point is an opportunity for people to evaluate you at some level. Now, if you're a personal trainer, hi, sorry, I can't take your call right now. That doesn't match off who you are. It's a touch point. You haven't differentiated yourselves. Okay? Have some fun with it. So, the idea is that whatever your sales process ends up, and there's the manual one, and there's what you might do if you've got a VA or someone who's really clever, turn it into something that looks kind of smart, hyperlink it, put it in your Vimeo system, put it in, anyone heard of the app called Aris, A-R-I-S? For those of you creating systems for your business, I think it's free, or most of it's free. You can load all your systems, your videos, everything in becomes your system. A-R-I-S, it's an app, I think it's a free app. So store it in your sales process thing. But whatever it looks like, if the reason for every small business failure, or most of them, is the lack of sales, there's a million, thank you. Someone's still there with me. If the reason for every small business failure is the lack of sales, if you were the production manager or managing director of the beer company opening cans and 70% were okay, 30 weren't, this is your opportunity to focus as much management time as you can. Critical thinking time. If you're on your own, it's critical thinking time with you and your business partner or your wife, your husband or yourself. It's just critical thinking time. How can I really make this smart? And the hairdressing team over here, one of the things we do is with clients, we collect the husband's mobile phone number under the pretense that if we can't confirm her showing up tomorrow for her color cut, whatever it is, then we're ringing husband, because if we can't confirm it, we're going to fill the slot with a waiting list. What we actually do is ring the husband the day after, the minute that she walks out of the salon and says, hey, it's Mary's salon thing here. We'll just sort of let you know that Mary's had her hair cut and coloured. Be nice if you noticed when she got home. Part of process. How do I make sure the lifetime value of a cut? Because if $300 a shot or whatever it is to have your hair done, you do that every 6 to 8 weeks. For the life cycle of that client where they sit there, for the 15 years they live in that same suburb, they're a valuable customer and an amazing source of referrals. Useful? Show of hands, who got something out of that? Sensational. There's a lot more to come in terms of, you think about this, there's three segments. I've just covered the middle one. I haven't talked about how you generate leads. That's in the marketing side. What we've talked about is just getting the customer on board, maybe for the first time ever. That little conversion part called the sales funnel. The very right-hand side is how do I keep my clients coming back time and time and time again? Even if you're a funeral director, you can still do that because they've got family and friends. So there's a lifetime value-y thing. So all we've talked about this morning is just the middle section. So you've got 2 minutes left. I want you to write down the top three things in your notebook, top three things that you've got that you're going to take back to your business and start implementing on Saturday morning or Monday, whatever. Top three things you're going to do that you've learnt from today that you're going to take back and start on Monday morning, only for the next day. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much, Si.
You're welcome, thank you.
Great job, huh?
Thanks, yeah.
Good start of the day? Yeah, well done.